Hi, today is July 14th, 2019, and this is Mobile Views Podcast 297. We haven't had one of these in a while. John and I have had various things going on, but in any case, a very happy Amazon Prime Day Eve to you, John.
Yeah, I've not done anything with Prime Day in the last few years. I think I might have bought one thing on Prime Day in the history of Prime Day.
Yeah.
But it might have been an accidental. Some things like. But I do like the idea of Prime Day.
Yeah.
And I will probably take a look and see if there's anything tomorrow that strikes me as desperately needed. And then maybe I'll get it.
But, I'm hoping, although I doubt it, I'm hoping the Acer Chromebook C434 is on sale because I'd really like to get another Chromebook, and that's the one I want at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Is it an Acer and Asus? I can't remember. Yeah, sorry about that, Acer and Asus. Let me look.
You want something from an A company, and they better have it.
That's right. And the answer is I got it wrong. It's an Asus or Asus. How do you pronounce it? Asus Chromebook Flip C434. That's the one I want. It's kind of pricey. It's like $569. Something like that. Actually, it's given its specs, it's probably worthwhile. But at any rate, so tomorrow, the 15th, and I think part of the 16th or something like that, are both Amazon Prime days, really. It's more than 24 hours. Okay, first, an apology. A partial apology to Google and maybe Samsung. So you might recall that months ago I was complaining that the Bluetooth stack on my Samsung Chromebook Plus running Chrome OS was pretty flaky with the mouse I was running. And then the recent Chrome, I think, 74 update. I just got 75, but as of the 74 update, the mouse basically had to be paired every time it went to sleep. So it'd work, and then, you know, the Bluetooth mice tend to sleep, and you normally click it to wake it up or move it around, but this one wouldn't wake up. I had to repair every single time. So I thought to myself, self, maybe it's the mouse. So I bought a Logitech M535 Bluetooth mouse, and it works fine and dandy with my Chromebook. So there you go. Sorry about that, Google and maybe Samsung. I don't know who's at fault with the Bluetooth stack, but the Logitech works fine. It doesn't wake up the Chromebook, but whenever I wake up the Chromebook, the Bluetooth mouse is right there ready to roll. Okay. And
Apology was due, and I think you've made up for the fact that you badmouthed them, so I think you're good.
Yeah, until it stops running again, then. All right, now, you know, I almost titled this podcast Old Stuff or whatever, but because we have a bunch of old stuff here. First is something, I don't know if you remember, John, you may not be old enough, but back in the day, there were various basics, as you recall. And there was a BASIC that came with the IBM PC, whose name I can't remember now. G BASIC, something like that.
That sounds roughly
M BASIC, something like that. Yeah. Anyways, Microsoft BASIC, and you know, a whole bunch of people used it, and BASIC became very big in the early 1980s because that's, you know, what everybody got for free. And then I think Microsoft released something called Quick BASIC, or Q BASIC was a follow up. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Q BASIC hasn't been around for well over a decade. But there is a site called Pete's QBASIC/QuickBASIC site. And Pete himself says, hey, you know what? I'm not really updating this much. His last update note was in 2018. And the last regular update, you know, active update, you know, when QBASIC was a thing, or QuickBASIC was a thing, was in 2008. So it's been over a decade. But the amazing thing to me is that, A, he still, you know, pays to have it running, wherever he has it housed or hosted.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike a lot of sites about legacy things that, you know, I forgot about it, it's still running. So, prompts to him. You know, you and I have probably run our share of sites that no longer exist or contributed to sites that no longer exist. And this guy's had this thing running for, I don't know, I want to say almost two decades now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty darn amazing. You know any sites like that that you...
Web pages that suck. Has been around almost 20 years, although it hasn't had a major update since about 2014.
Yeah.
But you talk about QBASIC. I do remember QBASIC because it right about the height of its popularity.
Yeah.
Or finding it. I guess it was a little after its height. I remember being at school and in a computer lab, and, you know, the fun thing was to open QBASIC and edit Guerrillas, the game, which is basically a little missile defense game,
right?
And change the constant of velocity. Because if you change the constant of velocity, instead of the bananas nicely arcing end over end, they fire like a cannon shot, like a bullet straight out. And it is the most, it was really one of the most hilarious things to a bunch of teenagers playing around with QBasic, was editing the constant of velocity. And, you know, there's a Star Trek episode where Q says something about just change the gravitational constant of the universe, and, you know, solve the problem. It's Deja Q from the third season of Next Generation. And
of course, we all remember that. But anyway, go ahead.
Of course. Name of the episode and where it came from. I have won trivia contests for Star Trek, so every so often I have to, you know, bring that out. But anyway, it really was sort of like that same thing. Change the gravitational constant of the universe, and there you go.
Yeah, that solves a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it really does. And it makes bananas travel like bullets.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious if you ever haven't had a chance to watch it. So yeah, go download QBasic, edit gorillas.bass. You might have to, I think you have to download a separate pack of games and then change that constant and watch Gorillas. Play it a few times with it actually at the right speed and then soup it up, and it'll give you at least minutes of enjoyment.
Yeah, you know, I used to write a column for I think it was Byte or something, called Jurassic Tech. And you know, I might revive this. You know, every couple of podcasts. Yeah, podcasts is something else. But podcasts, maybe I'll bring up some Jurassic Tech thing that I find interesting. Mm-hmm. As this one, I thought, you know, so props to this guy, Pete, and QBasic, Quick Basic site. Awesome. Okay, something else old. You know, I don't know if you've listened to the podcast, Tech Mean Ride, The Ride Home, which is affiliated.
No,
okay, so it is a one-man operation. It's pretty amazing. You know, normally it's really difficult to listen to podcasts with only one person speaking. There's only a couple I can think of that, less than a handful that I can think of, that, you know, were truly interesting. I think MacCast, I used to listen to that a while back. It was one guy, hardly ever had any guests. And, what was his name? The Podfather. Adam, I'm blanking on him. At any rate, he literally had, like, the first podcast I remember hearing, and he was all by himself, and he was pretty entertaining. But in any case, Tech Mean Ride Home is affiliated with techmean.com, you know, the news aggregation site. And what he does is he, you know, takes that aggregation and talks about some of the stories that he finds the most important or interesting. But what he's been doing lately, I think his name is Brian McCullough, and what he's been doing lately is on some weekends, he's doing what's called a long read. And this past weekend, which focuses on one story, this past weekend, though, he did his own writing, or two weekends ago, I should say. And he did a two-parter, which I thought I knew the whole story, but it was really interesting, because it turns out I didn't. It's called Tech Meme, T-E-C-H-M-E-M-E, The Man Who Could Have Been Bill Gates, the Gary Kildall story. And anybody with any interest in computers and computer history should listen to this two-part podcast. You can find it on ridehome.info, ridehome.info. And, of course, you can download it on iTunes, which is what I do. But it's a two-parter. It's pretty long. I would say it's maybe almost 2 hours total. But it's really well done, really well researched. And for those who don't remember, Gary Kildall was either the creator of CPM, not the co-creator, he called it control processor microcomputer, but I think it's actually control processor microprocessor. But anyway, it's created CPM, which was the first multi-platform multi-vendor platform operating system. So prior to CPM, basically, operating systems were tied to the hardware. So, you know, Apple's early Apple II stuff only came on Apples. Well, except for the Pineapple, but we'll skip over that. TRS-80 was on, you know, the much beloved Trash 80s, of which I still have one, and so forth and so on. But CPM ran on all kinds of different vendors' platforms, and which made it pretty unique. And Gary Kildall, you know, there's legendary stories about Kildall being approached by IBM first to use CPM as the basis for the IBM PC, and he kind of ignored them and went out flying and all this. And at any rate, so, IBM eventually went to Bill Gates and said, hey, do you have an operating system? And even though he didn't, said yes.
I'll get right on that.
Yeah. And you know, sure enough, by the time they needed it, he had it ready. So, you know, prompts to him. And created a literal empire. But anyway, this tells a story a little bit differently, or at least several versions of it. I guess it's, you know, it's like a multiple view kind of thing. Because there really isn't a definitive story. I should know Gary Kildall died 20 years ago. Maybe not that much, maybe 15 or so, but quite a while ago. He died quite a while ago. He died quite young. It's a really, really worthwhile pair of podcasts to listen to. Again, Tech Meme, The Ride Home, that's the name of the podcast. And the two episodes are called The Man Who Could Have Been Bill Gates, The Gary Kildall Story, Parts 1 and and 2. So go listen to it if you have any interest at all in the history of computers, and especially the history of the PC and at what might have been. I should note, you know, they had a, I think I actually bought CPM 86, which cost $200 versus the $40 that IBM charged for MS-DOS, I'm sorry, for IBM DOS. And that's one of the stories that is revealed in this podcast is, you know, what happened? You know, why did IBM sell both but then priced CPM 86 out of the range of most people's budgets? And quite frankly, it was out of my budget too, but I really wanted to play with it. So I spent the $200 and bought a copy. Okay, so history of PCs. Continuing on with old stuff. John, I didn't even know this existed. So apparently, on answers.microsoft.com, there is a posting called Farewell to Microsoft Internet Games and Windows XP, Windows ME, and Windows 7. And I guess it includes internet versions of Hearts and all kinds of games that are familiar, but I didn't know there was such a thing as Microsoft Internet Games. Did you know that?
I vaguely remember it from the Windows XP era, but I don't remember it past that.
Well, apparently continue through Windows 7, but it's going to be turned off soon. The service itself, I don't know what happens to games. I assume you can't play the games if the service is gone. But, you know, as usual, you know, if you have a consumer thing you like that's Microsoft, don't count on it being around for very long.
Unless it's Office.
Unless it's Office.
We'll talk about next. Office seems to have some staying power.
Yeah, Office is a thing. You know, it's got legs. In fact, I think Office and Microsoft various cloud services are what's keeping them afloat. And by afloat, I don't mean like they're struggling. They're doing quite well. But, you know, they've pivoted away from Windows as a mainstay in making money. Anyway, yeah. So John, you know, if you had not read this title in our podcast notes, show notes, and I asked you, John, what is the largest platform that Microsoft Word runs on? If you had asked me that, I would have said Windows. I don't know about you.
I probably would have said Windows too, but then now that I see it, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because, damn, those things are everywhere. Our good old little friends, the green little androids.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yeah, The Verge reports that, I guess according to Google's metrics, Microsoft Word for Android has been installed more than 1 billion times. It doesn't mean it's been on 1 billion devices, because, you know, sometimes you wipe things and you got to reinstall it. But let's, for the sake of argument, say it's pretty close to that. And since we know for sure there are not yet 1 billion PCs running Windows, because Microsoft, you know, was targeting that for last year, I think, but that never happened. My guess is that the largest platform for Microsoft Word is Android. And I feel fairly comfortable in saying that. I think it's a good current guess based on this. And I find it kind of amazing. I think if you'd asked me that 5-6 years ago, I said, you're nuts. You know, it's Windows or nothing for the Office stuff, but very surprising.
Well, and I had put a note on this. So recently, I was traveling and I was using Microsoft Office for a few things. And it really hit me that if you remember you had mentioned before we start recording iWork, Apple's office suite. And iWork had this thing when the cloud first came to iWork, where when you'd open up Numbers or you'd open up Keynote, you had access to a blob of storage for Numbers or a blob of storage for Keynotes. And it was nice because it meant that whatever you were working on one device, you could easily get to from another. But it was a little bit annoying if you wanted to do mass file operations or anything like that, because it was a blob. You had to open up each individual app. There wasn't a central file system for it. Well, Apple then made it into a file system with iCloud Drive, and it still seems a little clunky. It seems like it was much easier when it was a blob. Microsoft did the exact opposite transformation, and actually I think they did it right, where it's a file system. We all knew about file systems with Word and Office, but now we have the ability to get to our frequently used items or recently used items as a recently used option in that same file system. So when I, for example, when I turn on my device I haven't used in a little bit and I go to open up Word, it shows me the exact Word documents that I was using an hour ago on another device, and I can open them, and it's across all cloud storage locations. So if I'm, you know, looking at, for example, a file on a department SharePoint, and then I have a file on my own personal OneDrive open, and then I have another file on another SharePoint site open, all these different things, I can see them all pop up in one recently accessed menu when I launch Word.
Interesting.
Which is a really powerful way of turning cloud storage more into that blob-esque storage like Apple tried to do, where all of your Word documents show up where you would expect them to be in Word, but yet you still can use multiple locations. And so there's one thing that when I saw that Android has where most Office installs are at. That makes sense. And it also means that people can rather productively use Android, because if they were on their business computer and they had just opened something in SharePoint, assuming their you know device can connect to that same SharePoint site, they can get to that same file without a problem. So
Now, can you move files between cloud file systems, like from your personal OneDrive to your work SharePoint document library or something?
You would still need for that to use a file manager, but you could make a copy from one place to another.
Yeah, which is essentially the same.
So, yeah. If you don't mind having, you know, forking one version to another place, then yeah, you can do that as well, which is really kind of nice and useful, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah. Of course, security people can consider that information leakage, but
well, not if you are perfectly authorized to move it from one place to another. It's only leakage if it's wrong, you know?
Well, that is pretty cool. So what does it support? Is it, so iCloud, OneDrive, I assume. You said SharePoint already.
Yeah, so it's basically only in the Microsoft cloud.
Oh, okay.
It's not iCloud. No.
Yeah, okay.
But it'll support OneDrive for Business, and SharePoint. They're all... I mean, OneDrive and OneDrive for Business are different. OneDrive for Business and SharePoint are literally
SharePoint.
The same thing.
Yeah, they're both SharePoint.
Yeah, they're both SharePoint.
Yeah, okay. That's pretty cool, actually. So that's not quite as generalized as I thought. I thought it could do, like, Dropbox and iCloud and other things, which would make it really scary. But but otherwise,
well,
pretty
I
good.
I would say, for file picking, if you email a lot from your device, Outlook is still the best mail client on iOS, because you can hook up multiple sharing services. And so you can send something from any of those locations through regular email, and it won't force you to use a share link. It'll actually download the file onto your device and then attach it to an email and send it. So that's a very nice feature I don't know if people are quite aware of.
Cool. Well, I'm trying to think of if there's any last minute items I wanted to say for this podcast, since we haven't had one in a long time, but I don't think so. I think that we pretty much covered... You know, there hasn't been a lot of news lately, tech news that... Well, let me rephrase that. There hasn't been a lot of tech news that interests me lately.
There have been... The only two things that... And I don't have much to say about them are Microsoft... Or not Microsoft. Zoom having an exploit that Apple had to, you know, basically uninstall Zoom web server from a few devices. And Apple themselves proactively turning off walkie-talkie now for about a week on the Apple Watch until they plug up a problem with it. But those are what it is. I'd rather they figure it out and plug it up than someone else figure it out and exploit it. So
yeah, we should mention that for those who know, Zoom is a web conferencing service, kind of like Skype. I guess I shouldn't say web. Mm-hmm. It's not only web, but it's a conferencing service kind of like Skype. I know some people prefer it because it's easier to use, at least from what I can see. If you, especially if you're including people who are not in your work domain. Mm-hmm. And I don't use domain in internet-sensitive word, but your work, you know, whatever you call that. So easier to invite people. Yeah, so that's pretty, you know, pretty, not, I was going to say scary, but, you know, annoying and but interesting. Especially for people who are using the walkie-talkie feature, but they shouldn't, because I still remember the Nextel users, and I remember loathing them, because it was so freaking annoying.
Yeah, I've found in the last year or two, there's really only one time walkie-talkie seemed to be useful to me.
Yeah.
And that was at Disney World.
Oh, where that makes
other
sense.
People in the group, if they had the walkie-talkie app, and I had one other person in my group that had it.
Yeah.
And we didn't really even use it that much, because I don't think we thought about it until about 3/4 of the way through our trip.
Yeah.
So I like the idea of walkie-talkie, and I could see if you're an everyday user of it, it being really useful. Especially if you're in an office environment or somewhere where the person you need to talk to is maybe, you know, a short walk away, but you can't yell to them, or decorum would require you not to yell to them. So I do like the feature. I hope it gets turned back on very soon.
Well, I'm glad that you were able to use it before they turned it off. that would be pretty annoying if you're in the middle of your vacation with the group and everybody suddenly said, hey, what are we going to do now? And, you know,
probably maybe go back. Big text thread that we were using.
Yeah. And maybe next podcast we'll get some more info on the Manhattan blackout yesterday. I'm kind of interested in the tech aspect of it. You know, what services stayed up? Did the cell towers stay up with batteries? Or were people's cell phone less? I assume cell phones stayed up. But, you know, things like that. I'm always curious. Especially since we here, where I am in the middle of the nowhere in the Pacific, you know, we are just at the beginning of our annual hurricane season. And, you know, when we get, where I live, we haven't really been hit by hurricane force winds, but we've had enough issues where we've had, you know, power outages and things, sometimes not wind related, just because the electric company has trouble keeping power running. But, next time. Okay, folks. So this was a short one. Like I said, it's the first one John and I have done in like a month, maybe pretty close to a month.
3 weeks or so.
Yeah. So we'll try to get back on a more regular schedule. I think John's probably got another trip or two or something planned in the middle, and then fall. And John is a professor, so he has to go back to school, so to speak.
Yeah, I can't be as crazy and traveling.
Yep. Okay, folks. MobileViews Podcast 297. Happy Amazon Prime Day Eve, and maybe we'll talk about if we bought anything. I'm really hoping to get a new Chromebook. Although mine is perfectly fine. But anyway, we'll talk to you next time.